All right, hello everyone. This is podcast number 19. Today we'll be going over a reaction to an Ask Me Anything between Mia Bao, who's from DAO-based AI, to Sebastian Bourget, who is the co-founder and CEO of The Sandbox. This happened Friday, August 23rd, 2024. It's very fresh. It just happened. And I thought the questions that Mia asked, Mia also is on the advisory board for the Sandbox DAO, and she asked really good questions. And it was very, very timely to what's going on in the Sandbox DAO forums, as well as some SIPs that I have underway. So I wanted to do a reaction to this video. It's about 50 minutes long, and I had immediate thoughts. It was almost all of it was positive. I really liked this AMA. I thought it confirmed a lot of stuff that needed to be said and things that we can use as the DAO and the SandFam to be a DAO. So without further ado, let's go. Scope of the talk today is a reaction. It'll also be part opinion, so I'll offer my thoughts as we go along. Disclaimer is that I do not represent the Sandbox game or the Sandbox Foundation, which is the DAO. I am not your legal or financial advisor, and nothing I say is to be taken as legal or financial advice. My name is Lancer. I'm the SandDAO podcast host. SandDAO is a podcast all about the Sandbox DAO. News, updates, opinions, interviews. I lead the MetaWorlds team. We have two experiences up on Sandbox and been a part of the Sandbox since midway through season one. And I love the DAO. It's the intersection of business, community, and gaming. And it's right up my alley in my professional world. So I love it. Scoreboard, nothing's changed. Still have two SIPs that are in vote right now, SIP 11 and 12, Sandbox Academy in the Philippines with Mark Bago, and the Sandbox Ambassador Program by the Sandbox team itself. Mark and I did our interview on his SIP. That's SandDAO podcast episode 12. So go check that out. Really, really good. Speaking with Mark, loved speaking with Mark and what he's trying to do in building the Sandbox Academy in the Philippines. Then we have one SIP in the draft, on forums. That's the NFT Evolution, Crafting and NFT Drops by Crypto Diplo. So that one we are scheduled in the next couple weeks between Diplo and I. So we're looking forward to that. And that brings us to 7 SIPs approved. 3 SIPs not approved, and 1 SIP withdrawn. The SIP 9 and 10 both did not pass because neither of them met quorum, so the $30 million that we need for a SIP to be approved or disapproved, in which case it didn't meet that, so it was automatically disapproved. Checkbook, we're still at 1.9 million SAN spent, which is 13% of the 15.5 million SAN budget. DAObase.ai statistics, there are 1,808 voters in the Sandbox DAO, 211,000 token holders, and just really, really cool stats. Go check them out, DAObase.ai, and search for Sandbox DAO. So, without further ado, let's get after what we're here for today, which was the AMA. Between Sebastian, who runs the Sandbox company, and Mia Bao, who runs DAO-based AI, she's also on the advisory board. She has some Q&A for him, and really, really cool. So, without further ado, here we go. I'll be commenting as this goes along.
So let's get the Twitter space started. So hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining today's Twitter space with us. And this is Mia from DAOBase.ai. We are super excited to have our honored guest, Sebastian, co-founder and CEO of the Sandbox, and also the honored council member of the Sandbox DAO. So welcome, Sebastian. How are you doing? And please say hi to our audience here.
Thank you, Mia. And hello, everyone. Good to be
and back. I had a SamDAO podcast with Sebastian. Today on this IMA. Was that not
amazing.
Long ago?
So, all right, let's get started with today's Twitter space. So, Sebastian, can you
episode
tell
8
us a little more
was my
about the story,
interview with him?
How you actually got into the Web3 space and then decided to bring the Sandbox game into the crypto world.
Well, so as far as I remember, as a child, you know, I received my first video game console as a gift. It was a Super Nintendo, and I played Super Mario World. And at that time, I really got hooked into it, and I said, "Oh, one day I'll love to make my own video games." And I figure out, like, okay, what kind of studies do you need to do to make your own video game? What are the jobs leading to that industry? And I found it was quite actually difficult. It required long study, special schools, and that's an industry where, like, the barrier to entry to make video games back then on console and PC was very high, both in terms of, like, a cost of development, the skills required, and so on. So
yeah, big studios.
Engineering school, I went more
big
into,
studios like BioWare, Bungie.
Around 2000,
they dominated the market.
10-11 smartphone appeared, and when I saw those devices and I saw, like, people started to make games, and they were, again, like, small team or even like just one individual person doing a game, I felt like, wow, that's the right moment, you know, like, let's get into this into gaming again, and let's see what kind of game we can do on those new devices, leveraging the different things like the touchscreen, the accelerometer, and so on. And in 2011 we co-founded a first mobile game studio that was implementing like free-to-play and brands and IPs to create, like, storytelling, character-driven builder game, as well as what became Sandbox, our first big success.
You co-founded that with Arthur Madrid.
Even though, like,
if you search in Google, you can still find all the original pitches that he did, the both of them did together.
Like, anyone could make a game, even without any programming.
I hope I can get him on the podcast to interview him in the early days as well.
Because
he spoke quite a bit on the white paper and how he wanted the Sandbox to be run. He was there as it was acquired by Animoca, so he had quite a cool perspective.
40 million downloads and 70 million player-made creation. And it's only around 2017 that I found about blockchain and cryptocurrencies and NFTs. One thing that we noticed over the time, being close to the creators, people who were playing the game and sharing.
So they found it in 2011, 2012, and it wasn't until 2017 that they switched over to NFTs.
And the main reason why they were leaving is, like, they didn't, they were already passionate about the game. They love creating, but, like, because we didn't provide a form of monetization and only, like, social recognition by featuring their content on the gallery, that wasn't sufficient to keep them hooked over a long time. And I didn't find a solution to that problem. Like, sometimes I could make a contract, I could contact a few of them, and we work with 100, but that became quickly unmanageable. Too many creators. And until 2017, and I found about blockchain and NFTs, like discovering CryptoKitties and seeing as a game that people could actually buy content, virtual cat from each other.
It's interesting to think CryptoKitties set all this off for him.
We found immediately
set him on a path to where we are today in the Sandbox.
Like, for the first time, I could make payments to those creators. They could sell that content outside of the game and make some revenue. And that's how we say, let's apply NFTs to the Sandbox. Not just making virtual cat, but any content could become an NFT and could allow those creators to monetize. And it became the version that we know today. We started from scratch. We built a platform, a game maker tool that's no code, a 3D editor, a marketplace, a map. And we've grown it, applying all the experience we accumulated working with the brands. Today, we have over 400 brands. We have 6 million users with the wallet, and proud to already count 1,300 user-generated content games on the map.
Yeah, amazing story. So basically, first you get connected with a blockchain back to 2017, and to grow such a, like, a metaverse giant in the space. So I'm kind of curious, how do you feel, like, from the first beginning until now, like, the Sandbox is one of the largest metaverse projects in the space. Do you think from the people side and also from the technology side and also from the, like, community side, is there any changes during this period of time, especially for those kind of three circles already?
I feel like, yes, we've seen various cycles. I think, like, when we launched Sandbox originally, we were already we kind of missed like the bull market of 2015, 16, and 2000, even 17, maybe, and 2018, 19 were more like a bear market already. So we didn't.
So these opening questions are all about.
And I don't think it was a bad thing because it really
is his history in the build up to where we are today.
In mobile gaming, like we have to first build a product, soft launch it or launch some product, and then grow a community of users. Our target was the creator, so we launched the 3D editor first, and we launched the game maker. Then we introduced lands for the first time in December 2019 with our first land sale. And back then, they were not even in our own token; they were in ETH. They were successful.
We if you're listening to this on podcast and Spotify, and just check the link or watch the VOD on YouTube, and you can see where the broadcast was held on X, Twitter, formerly known as Twitter.
The market was better, and like the exchanges were actually listing new tokens at that time. Binance didn't do any new token launch for close to a year. And when they reopened their launchpad, which was one of the most successful platforms they had for introducing new tokens, they did it with one key thematic, which was gaming. Like they wanted to show like how gaming could drive adoption of cryptocurrencies and NFTs, and Sand and AXS, the Axie Infinity token. We were the two gaming tokens that were launched at that time. And I'm really excited and happy that we made the choice to wait, to choose the right partner, the right moment, and the fact that we had a product already ready for the users who discover Sandbox for the first time to be onboarded, to have something to do, to participate in the building the vision together with us. And today, we are already like 4 years later, and it's amazing to see like the community has grown, the creators have grown all around the world, and we continue to update the product, add more capabilities, more feature, and launch the DAO just 3 months ago, pursuing the vision of decentralization as well that NFTs and blockchain allows.
So I pause it. It's been really, since I started in December 2021, I think that's when I started, it's grown a lot. Even as just a gamer when I first played, this has improved big time. And now that I'm on the back end of Game Maker, where I've helped put together some experiences, I can tell the difference, especially between 0.8 and 0.10, big changes. And it even feels more stable doing it that way now with the new additions. So I'm pretty happy with where and the progress that it's been making. And you can just see the trajectory just go up and up and up and up and up. And to me, before I started really investing in the sandbox, I was just a gamer, I saw this trajectory. You could see all the improvements each time the login that you logged in. There was more updates, there were events, there were always new partners. And so it wasn't until I got into Game Maker where I felt some of the pain of the other artists and Game Maker creatives usually talk about, Andy, Richie, Touche, Hoddle, Vision, so Joseph, many, many others, AU24K, speak frequently, OG Shakespeare, speak about some of the difficulties with Game Maker, but each iteration, it is going upwards in a positive trend. So that makes a lot of sense what he's saying right now about how the trend is up. And it's getting better over time. It's just iterative success or improvements.
Yeah, I mean, like, especially for the project, to have a sustainable and long-term plan is definitely important. And also to wait for a really good moment to launch a token or launch a project is also one of the priorities within the entrepreneurs. Kind of curious, how do you guys to determine which is actually the right moment to, no matter for launch your project and also launch your token, how do you guys to value this kind of process?
I think like because I'm very, my experience as a serial entrepreneur is like we focus on like what can people do with what you're launching, actually. Like it's very important for me to have
This is where you really start to get into the mind and the cool part where I started really perking up. What he said there was that how did he know when to launch the token? So he's talking about the Sand token that launched in 2020, I believe. And Joseph will talk about this because he was one of the main people who helped with that. But, and they had launched on Binance. So when was the right time to launch it? Well, Seb just revealed that one of the main things that he looks for is who's going to use it and what are they going to do with it? And so that's a pretty key business insight for if you want to launch your own token. But for one of the gates that Seb was looking for in order for Sand to launch, which right now, I think there's 30 billion tokens, right? Yeah, 30 billion, I think, tokens. And full and not in circulation, but in full total supply. Right now it's trading at 29 cents, whereas its high was over it was $4, something like that. So in its prime, it was trading quite high. But a successful token launch by any count. And right now it's top 100 tokens on CoinMarketCap, right? Go to CoinMarketCap and you search Sand. It's number 94 of all time. It is number 94. And how many are there? There are, I don't know, that I see 9,000 right now, just in the search bar. So there's over 9,000. I didn't even mean to do that right there. Over 9,000. But so it's the top 100 of all time right now. And for gaming, it's top 10. So still an impressive showing.
Product or a form of MVP, first version of the product, and to understand exactly who is the target audience for that product. And we apply that both to the product, but also to the content. When we announce an IP or partnership at Sandbox, we really shorten the amount of time that people have to wait until, like, between the announcement and the moment they can do something with that IP is actually happening. And we've been shortening from a couple of months when we were first doing those land sales with the brand and then later on introducing an avatar collection or experience to play to less than a few days or hours. So we announce a brand, we already have like an avatar collection for people to start pre-registering or buying it straight away. And the next week they can launch and play the experience and collect reward. A few months later, they can enter a game jam with the brand where they have this unique opportunity to co-create their own game with their favorite brand and official NFTs. And that's exciting because it really highlights that there is always a utility. It creates a pattern where, like, if you enter Sandbox and you buy something on Sandbox, you should be able to trust that something concrete will happen with that. It's very important as well to establish that trust over a long time and keep delivering behind.
This is one of the reasons why I'd say he's a successful chief operating officer, COO. You hear his language, how he keeps talking about how driving at the product, driving at the deliverable, driving at saying you're going to deliver and then delivering on that. So it builds trust, it builds a pattern of success. And for people who want to invest their time, effort, money into this, they can be reasonably certain that what, even if the progress isn't as fast as they would like it to be, it is progress and they can expect results.
And we've done as well at Daily when we launched season 1, season 2, season 3, and soon season 4 of Sandbox. It's coming quite soon. Be excited. A lot of great stuff there. And every time we've updated the game maker, we've opened the publishing, we've opened the marketplace. Everything we planned for has happened so far in the roadmap.
Amazing, amazing. That's definitely a super amazing journey for you and also for the Sandbox. So I would say for this year, 2024, one of the like biggest milestone or biggest launch for the Sandbox, besides the metaverse side, that is the news that the Sandbox is launching a DAO. So we actually launched the DAO back in the...
So here's where she starts talking about the DAO. And I really enjoyed the Q&A, especially from this point on. You'll see why.
Late of May, right? So it has been like running successfully for almost 3 months now. We know that when we first get started with something new, everybody will be super excited. And then when things getting growing, some of the questions and also problems will follow as well. So how has been the journey for you so far? And how do you like responding to tell the feedbacks, especially from the DAO community right now?
So we did introduce the first phase of the DAO back in May. And for us, it was a great moment because we've been waiting almost 4 years after the project started.
So what he's referring to there is the white paper. The white paper references the Sandbox DAO, and this was published in 2020. So he and I talk about this in our podcast interview. That was podcast episode, feels like a lifetime ago, but it really wasn't that long ago. Podcast episode 8. Sebastian and I talk about this. When was the right time? Or how did you know it was the right time? And why? What was the gap between 2020 and now? And he'll expound upon that here. But what he told me at the time, this time last month, was that he didn't feel comfortable with what they had offered, and he waited for them to be able to offer something that felt equal to what the DAO was supposed to be. He wanted to make sure that there was enough experiences, enough partners, enough value ready to receive the DAO and all of the expectations and stuff that goes along with it. So that's what he's referring to. And that's why he waited for 4 years before pushing to have a DAO implemented like they did in May.
We introduced decentralization. We took our time to analyze how other DAOs were actually working, performing, what worked, what didn't work for them, how we could balance like the voting power between the different holders of the token. Something unique on the Sandbox DAO is that, for example, you don't just need Sand token to vote, but also people who own land have actually more voting power with a 4,500 voting power versus one for one land. And that is...
So one sand equals one voting power, one land equals 4,500 voting power.
Unique to Sandbox because lands represent like owning a piece of the metaverse and building it together with us. We also wanted to introduce progressively the different features and have the transparency on how the budget is actually being spent, which is the first thing you can see on the dashboard. We selected the council member Yatsu, the chairman of Animoca Brands, Shannon Snow, the CEO of World of Women, and as well like Jean-Michel Payon, an executive at Zedger, Frédéric Montagnon, and myself. And then the advisors, which Mia is part of, we want people who are very involved already from the beginning in the space, that are familiar with Sandbox, own land, or have been building projects in Sandbox, and even better with Mia, which is like an amazing person. We all love her. Like, she's been representing the community of Sandbox in Greater China for many years. She's been close to communities and others, been educating the community, and she's also...
She and I did our interview just a couple weeks ago, that was podcast episode 14.
Gathers the information and the stats of all DAOs, which provide very valuable feedback for us as well. So far, we have 12 SIP sandbox improvement proposals that are live. 10 of them have been voted. I think we were able to get approval and quorum around 6 or 7 already. So there's been some learning as well, and already we're iterating very fast by introducing features soon like delegation, so we can make sure that there's always a sufficient level of participation, so all the SIP will be moving forward. SIPs covered the constitution, the budget, the type of project, education, charities we could support. Right now there is a SIP live about Ambassador, an academy on Sandbox for training creators in Philippines,
which neither have reached quorum yet,
to see like the community starting to be involved progressively more and more. And I think we will give ourselves a year until we can really assess the results of the impact of the DAO and the decentralized governance on the project.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of progress within the DAO community and a lot of proposals coming out already. So basically DAO and also this kind of decentralized governance is part of the native crypto-like space and also the native Web3 projects. That's definitely one of the core things within the community. So how do you guys first get this kind of idea that the Sandbox is going to launch a DAO? Is there any specific rhythm for you guys to have this kind of idea and actually make it happen?
I think like our role is really to encourage people when they want.
Okay, here it is. Here's where I really, because it's not the first time Seb has said this, but it is a recent reaffirmation, a reacknowledgement of what he said a while ago. And I think some of us, when he first said what he's about to say again, when we first heard him say that back in May, so May 28th is when they launched the DAO, and it came out of nowhere, by the way. None of us had any inkling this was going to happen. But in any case, when this happened, Seb came on to a bunch of AMAs. So did Cyril, who's the DAO administrator. And they were asked questions about what's going on, how is this, did this come to be? And if you go back to those AMAs, you'll hear a lot of, they use the term progressive decentralization. And I'd first heard that a few months ago when they did this AMAs. But when I did research into Mia and I watched some of her videos, I realized she'd been saying that word for years. I think she said it like 2 years ago where she did her own videos about the DAO and the emergence of the DAOs, not the Sandbox DAO, but DAOs as a generality, and her YouTube channel. So she had been saying this word for a while now, and I had not known that until I didn't know who she was until I started researching into the different advisory board members. So he's going to explain again and reaffirm what his vision is for the DAO. Okay, so this is super, super important. Listen to this.
We want to do something for Sandbox when they have an initiative, a project, whether it's like global or very localized in different regions of the world, like we were talking about Philippines before, etc. Mm-hmm. Instead of always coming to the Sandbox and ultimately to me in a very vertical structure where like some of the team members will ask finally for an approval, we will encourage them to know to do like, it's amazing what you want to do, but ultimately it shouldn't be us as Sandbox to decide what's best for the platform. It should be the mm-hmm. community itself, and you should use their voting power through the sand and the land to decide if they think, like you're suggesting, that what you propose is going to drive an impact. What kind of impact can it drive? Like, can it bring more users, more creators, more awareness? Can it help the product to become better by deciding on features of the roadmap, by supporting the development of custom tools that make the life of the creator easier? That was one of the SIP before. To drive initiative like participating at a conference around the world, like DEF CON that's coming, or Token 2049 in a matter of a few weeks. How much reward should be distributed during the various season and events and so on. Ultimately, all of those decisions that we are making internally as a Sandbox team will be progressively allocated and handed over to the community to decide. And I think it's not something for granted. It's really new, this idea that I can decide as a player, as a creator, as a member of the community, how the project is going to evolve and what should be the priority. So we also need to educate more that you have that power, but that power is only effective if you actually go there to check, to read, to discuss, to challenge sometimes, and to vote, to say yes, no, abstain, or whatever like the SIP, the improvement proposal will require in terms of feedback.
Mm-hmm. All right. From
Okay. That was it. Seb just said on repeat, so he said this back in May in NFC Lisbon with Cyril. He said that progressive decentralization, right? So they're started out right now fairly centralized. They have a special council that can veto SIPs, and the SIPs go through Cyril's DAO team, and the DAO team heavily scrutinizes the SIPs to ensure that it's complete. And as I mentioned in podcast 18, I have 5 SIPs that are going through his team right now, and one of them is to fund this podcast. And I've had to spend a lot. We would think we're on our 4th or 5th back and forth right now. It's been over a month since I started this with them, just on this SIP, SIP alone. It's been a lot of scrutiny. I had to really bore down on the cost sheet to the nth degree, itemize costs and that sort of thing. And then we're currently discussing the metrics of success metrics. So I submit a SIP, and then they say, hey, what we'd like to see this, or we recommend this change. And then it's been going back and forth like that for a while now. And some of the other SIP authors are experiencing the same thing. So right now it's more centralized. It's going through that funnel. But what Seb just said is that his goal, his intent is through the process of progressive decentralization, he is handing responsibility that right now exists within the hands of the Sandbox game company to the DAO. So he said it shouldn't just be us deciding what's best for the platform. It should be the community and their voting power to decide if what others are suggesting is good for driving impact. And to reinforce what I just summarized, he then said, all the decisions that we're making internally as a Sandbox team will be progressively handed over to the community to decide. And he specifically mentioned development decisions. He specifically mentioned features on the roadmap and the custom tools and participating in events around the world. He intends for that to be decentralized and given to the DAO. So that's bold. And that he mentioned similar in my podcast with him. So he's been consistent about it since May 28th when the DAO launched, that progressive decentralization for him means giving responsibility, duties, and tasks that currently exist within the Sandbox company over to the DAO. Which, and I remember saying this during my podcast with him, that Seb, that's a bold vision. That is bold. And Andy Ritchie on podcast number one disagreed that the DAO should have that power because he believed the DAO will mess it up. That was the very first podcast, which was a community reaction. And yeah. Wow, that's cool. And right now we gotta get ready. If that's the goal and that's where this is going, we gotta get ready for that. Right now we don't have a governance structure outside of the Sandbox DAO admin team. We're all disorganized. The Sandbox SandFam itself is disorganized. We don't have delegations yet. But even if we do get delegations, there aren't central places by which we organize ourselves. So that's one of the reasons why this podcast exists, because there wasn't anything like it. There isn't anything like it right now. The only way that we can convey thought, not the only way, but one of the ways I want to convey thought, because I don't feel like this conversation, this narrative is happening. And since I started, I've had a lot of conversations and been able to use these sorts of things that are being said to help further the conversation and contribute to the community. And when I start really delving into stats and figures and some of these, like the business of catalysts that I'll bring when I screen share flowcharts and stuff like that, that's where I'm going to really start contributing in my own way to furthering and helping us get ready for this responsibility that Seb intends to progressively decentralize over to the DAO. That right there made this whole AMA just juicy. It's great. I love the questions that Mia are asking.
The answer you just did. So there are a lot of initiatives that the Sandbox DAO has already like started to supporting. So from the council's perspective, what type of proposal does you guys or the Sandbox DAO particularly encourage the users to actually like propose the proposals? Is there any specific dimensions that you guys will encourage?
There's a few dimensions that we definitely encourage. The way we see the Sandbox and Metaverse, like this is an open platform that supports like culture. So everything that touches around art, around sport.
He says that a lot. Seb does. He wants to be the cultural capital of the Metaverse. He said that so many times. He links culture with gaming. And I just watched a podcast with Jean-Michel Paun, who is on the special counsel. He also founded Ledger and Grow Capital. And he said something very similar. However, he made a distinction that art is like photography, paintings, and culture is like profile pictures. So he considers Board 8 Yacht Clubs to be cultural things of cultural significance, as well as gaming is culture. So where Seb is saying the cultural capital, I think he is using that in a broader term. And Yatsu also talks about culture when he speaks. Yatsu is the founder and chairman, CEO. CEO of Animoca Brands, which is one of, if not the largest Web3 company in the whole Web3 industry. I think they have over like 350 companies that they own. So they are all in. And Sandbox is one of those companies Animoca Brands own. They acquired it in 2018. I think it was 2018. They acquired the Sandbox.
Around fashion, around music, around gaming is encouraged in terms of content. Also, we see ourselves as a platform that drives impact. So if you have projects that want to help like charities, NGOs, you want to make like the more people can donate to a certain cause while being engaged on Sandbox. I think like we've proven with one of the SIP with the Red Cross that the community wants to do that. And like a lot of projects in Sandbox have been driven by the impact we can make in the physical world. We've seen various SIP around
Red Cross
as well.
One of the SIPs.
Education,
academies. SIP number
so the more
three
we can
four.
Onboard creators in various regions of the world, in India, in Philippines, in Thailand, the more we can give access to that opportunity to people based in countries which in the Web2 and free-to-play industry have been for a long time considered as tier 2 countries, tier 3 countries, where like the quality of the user doesn't matter because they don't have the same spending power. All of that is being erased, and it doesn't matter the country for us. As long as the community thinks there is an opportunity to bring new users, we'll go forward. We are also really interested to see how the representation, the events, the activities that we are doing to promote Sandbox can be conducted not only by our core team, the marketing team, event team, but also anyone around the world. If they want to launch their own meetup, if they want to like be present at the major conference there in that country, in their city, if they want to have a booth and so on, why don't they propose it, explain to the community what they want to do, and let's vote. And I think like we've seen positive voting, like the community wants to see those kind of opportunities. So this is really what we want to encourage. We also want to encourage like the participation to vote who will be the next ambassadors, next influencers, the next community manager of the DAO will be someone elected by the community.
I assume he means the next one, because the one that's being hired right now is being selected by the DAO administration team. I think Cyril is selecting it. They made a post, they being the Sandbox DAO team, made a post about the community manager, and they're currently being selected by the Sandbox DAO team. It was Joseph, but I don't think that's there anymore. I think they're selecting someone else. But so not this one. They must mean the next one. But that was interesting to me when I heard that. Seb wants and expects that the DAO, meaning SandFam, DAO members, vote on the community manager. That's not happening this time around, not that I know of.
Itself, and so on. So it's great to see that anyone who contributes in a way can propose himself as well to help and be recognized.
And also right now, the SIP for the ambassadors, which I just finished in podcast 18, so that's not being chosen by the community either. The SIP itself is to fund the next wave of ambassadors for 400,000 sand. So it's to approve 400,000 sand for those new ambassadors. Those ambassadors being chosen by the Sandbox game company and will answer to the game company, not the DAO. So this kind of puts into a weird perspective of, well, when is this supposed to happen? Is this supposed to happen the next time around? Or was it supposed to happen this time, but a miscommunication happened? I don't know. But Seb clearly wants the community to choose. The community being SandFam, not the centralized entities that are around the DAO, the DAO administration team, or the Sandbox game company. That speaks to the previous question where he really wants to hand those responsibilities to the DAO itself. But maybe he's referring to the next wave, because the DAO being so new and SandFam having trouble making quorum, maybe he doesn't feel that we're ready yet, or maybe it's just timing that it happened the way it did. In either case, I give him the full benefit of the doubt, and I look forward to improving, seeing this improved.
Recognized by the committee itself for their merits.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So it's basically kind of like everybody within the community can be an ambassador and advocates of the sandbox, exactly like that. I would say this one.
Yes, but not right now. I mean, everyone can go to the link and apply, but it seems they have no intention of accepting everyone and will down select to a very specific. I mean, even when I asked them being the sandbox SIP authors for the sandbox ambassador rumor proposal, they're from the sandbox game company, the ones who authored that. I asked them, what would it take, you know, to be, or I think I asked them, what were the expectations on a content creator? And they said that it implied that the bar was pretty high. They have to have a set number of followers and blah, blah, blah. Definitely not chosen by the community at that point. So maybe that's just because this round or this wave of ambassadors is being chosen by the company. But even so, it seems like what Seb is saying and what is happening beneath him is not the same thing. I don't know what's going on there, but what's happening and what Seb is saying doesn't exactly line up right now, and maybe it's just because everything's so new and we're trying to all figure it out together.
It would be super powerful if we actually like activated everybody within the community.
Right.
So also
cool.
There's a question that, because like the core team is pushing some of the direction directly, and also the community is doing some similar stuff probably at the same time. So how do you balance the work between the core team and also the community? And also I've noticed there's some of the proposals actually coming from part of the core team, right? So does all of these kind of like operational activities actually push into the DAO and get approved and get some of the budget? They are not getting the budget from the core team directly.
I don't know what word she's using there. I couldn't figure it out. I think she's saying courting, the work between the core team and the community. I'm not sure what that word is, but Seb's answer to this is super, super interesting. I love this answer.
How does this thing kind of get balanced eventually?
Well, I believe, like, generally speaking, I always believe, like, in the greater good. Like, that if you're committed to, like, drive positive impact, if you're committed to show that creator can actually make a revenue on the platform and share those stories, if we've been able through the journey of Sandbox for many years to drive, like, new job, new possibility for people to earn, etc. Like, good things spread out, and they spread out not just because they get very viral, but because, like, you want to recommend something that has done a good impact on yourself to other people. So I believe, again, in that notion of greater good, and like, if we show, like we've done until now, the cap, the direction in a centralized manner, and progressively we've been educating our community to about that, and we hand over that power to that community, hopefully, like, just like a child that you've been educating as a parent, they would have acquired certain values, they would have acquired certain concepts, and hopefully they will also carry those by themselves because of that education. Like, we are not here to speculate on the back of other people, to scam others, etc. We are here to actually make fun games, to express our creativity, to express our culture, to bring unique and original content you don't find on other platforms, to help people to drive in various causes around environment, climate change, poverty, hunger, etc. And I love to see the community respect those and will carry on forward.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So,
cool. Very, very cool answer. Whether or not you agree or I agree, and I do mostly agree with that. I think that's a really cool perspective. That's exactly one of the reasons why I invested in the sandbox and I commit to it the way that I am, is because it's very clear that Seb believes what he's saying and that he's acting on those beliefs, and that I trust that he will continue to act on those beliefs. And if he does follow through to the very, very, very end, then I don't see anything but positivity happening for the sandbox, to see its trend continue to go in that direction. And what he said, though, about the parent and the child thing is exactly what that's exactly what he was saying, very similar things at the beginning when he was at NFC Lisbon and all the AMAs that he did and the Twitter spaces thereafter, was that that was like the implied intent around and progressive decentralization. He didn't quite say it like that until now, that what they're trying to do is, and through the progressive decentralization, is show us the way and then hope that we continue following that way. So that's why I think they're being the way they are about the SIPs and really, really scrutinize it to the nth degree, because they want the SIPs and the way the SIPs are written to be, to come out as really specific and measurable, like SMART goals, a specific measurable, realistic and timely. What's the A? A was, my gosh, how did I forget the A? Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timely. So I think they're doing it that way because they want everyone else to read those SIPs and be like, wow, those SIPs are really specific, and my SIPs should be like that too. But that's not what's happening right now. It seems like the community SIPs have to be that way, but not the TSB SIPs. We just did in podcast 18 a review of SIP number 11, which was the Sandbox Ambassador one, the one they're talking about just a few minutes ago. It was very generic, very, very generic. The price that the resources asked was just a flat 400,000 sand. And I just finished a couple of days ago breaking down my cost estimate for the Sandel podcast SIP for the third time. I had to break it down even further to the exact, or not the exact, but the amount that I intend on paying individual people on the team. So instead of rolling it up to labor, I now have to, break it down to sound engineer, to video editor, to researcher, all the people that I proposed to be on the team in the SIP. But that's not what happened for a lot of these SIPs so far. And so, yeah, maybe it's just a matter of they're trying to implement that as time goes on. And the first ones got through because they got through and they weren't applied the same scrutiny that is happening right now to mine. And that just might be because they're trying to do better over time. And that's the best they could do in the very beginning. So if that's the truth, if that's what it is, then okay, that makes sense. But definitely not the same standard.
During this kind of period of the proposal voting, we also found some of the challenges, especially for a data started. So one of the challenges, like common challenge, not only for the sample style, but also for some other like newly started DAOs, the problem is that the first when the proposal get like proposed, sometimes the voting power is a little bit low, and the DAO participation is also a ratio is a little bit low. So as for those kind of challenges, how does the DAO and also how does the council members decided to tackle this kind of problems? Is there any like updates from that side I can share with everybody?
Absolutely. Well, it's exactly the kind of learning and takeaway after like running the DAO for 3 months, whether there is a certain fatigue, whether certain people, like you don't feel concerned by the voting of certain decision, whether like we need to spend, to give more time for people to learn, to be informed across different channel and vote, or we should reward people who are voting so we create like a positive behavior and repeated pattern. I think like those are great feedback to see that certain SIP didn't pass by, not just because people didn't want to, but by lack of minimum number of participating votes.
He's talking about the 30 million quorum,
which is also a very important protection.
The past two failed because they didn't even reach half of
attention. Certain very
they didn't even get above 16 million quorum voting power.
Even like they are not necessarily fair or positive for the community. And to prevent that, what we are going to do is we continue to do more education, talk more about every SIP. Like we are doing right now, we can go in details. Maybe time them better because the middle of the summer is actually August is probably.
So I don't think timing is the issue. North
hemisphere, August is not a great period of time.
It's just not reaching the voters.
Outside,
you need
holidays, enjoying some great time with family and friends. And we're going to introduce delegation, which is a mechanism where you can actually give your voting power to someone else that will represent you and hopefully share the same value and vision, so they could vote on your behalf. And those delegators will become a little bit like super electors in the US, where like they will gather more voting power. And probably because of that, it's a responsibility for them. They will be very more more active following and discussing the SIP, because like if not, people will not give them the voting power, and almost like in a political system. So it's quite interesting to see that some of the core principle of democracy are happening as well in the metaverse. And keep in mind, democracy is a very young political system versus others that we've lived through the history, human history and civilizations. So it's interesting to see it apply in gaming and metaverse as well.
Yeah, that's super cool. I'm kind of curious. So after the delegation function is out, for the delegation function within all of this kind of mature or sophisticated DAO, the delegation ratio is actually pretty high. For example, ApeCoin DAO, they have over 70% of the delegation ratio for within the voting period. And also for some of the DeFi DAOs like Uniswap, Maker, they also have a very high delegation ratio. I mean, everybody.
So this is very cool. So this is. Mia is from, she founded the DAOBase.ai. They use analytics, statistics, and aggregation to pull together statistics. So what she's saying is, in their research, they found that ApeCoin DAO, their wallets are over 70% delegated. The wording, I think, because of the language vocabulary there, I think that's translating to over 70% of the wallets in the ApeCoin DAO are delegated. That is, wow. And that Uniswap also has a very high delegation ratio, meaning that a lot of its wallets are delegated as well. That's fascinating. I wonder if Sandbox would do the same thing. I guess we'll find out.
In the community is a little bit lazy in terms of decision making. So I think that definitely makes sense if we introduce this kind of delegation feature. So when can we actually expect this kind of delegation feature be live and everybody can participate eventually?
Well, you see, that's exactly the value of like having information, data that prove that it's effective. But thanks to DAOBase and what you just said, like we now have even more confirmation that this will hopefully drive impact and see the right priority to apply. We're defining exactly how we will work, how much vote on delegator minimum person is to acquire to become themselves a super delegator. And we hope that within a month or two, the technical implementation will be ready. So before the end of the year, we're back on track, actively proposing, actively voting. And
in a month or two,
great SIP.
Before end of 2024,
for the benefit of the community,
he says.
Okay, got it. Yeah, let's looking forward to this feature implemented to the Sandbox.io website. Super excited. I believe that a lot of
cool
minds will take over this kind of control. But there's also one thing. Everything has two sides, right? So as for the delegation feature, so some of the people actually raising up this kind of question. So like for example, ApeCoin DAO, there are some of the delegators over there. They are taking a lot of voting power. The community is kind of questioning. Okay, is another way of centralization? So because like all of the voting power, voice power are actually controlled by a small group of people. So how do you guys responding to this kind of like questions within the community? And probably will raise a question like later on.
Well, we're going to see how effectively it unfolds. I think, again, like there's always an experimental part to that. I cannot predict how it will. Always we wish for the best. We try to think of all the different bad scenarios that could happen and prevent them. I hope that it will rise interest as well for new community leaders to emerge, because they will feel like, because I own a lot of land or I'm part of this neighborhood, I want to be like the mayor of that neighborhood and represent the voting powers, for example, of all the landowners in my neighborhood, something like that. That can be a very likely scenario if we were to compare what's a virtual world like versus what the physical world and like metropolis and small different urban hubs are. I also feel like people who concentrate already a lot of sand token will start to feel like, and they can wait as much without necessarily having all the financial that they can control. They will represent as much voting power as people that hold a lot of sand, but maybe have not been as active in the project thanks to that. And so it's also a way to create a new equilibrium that for people who are very involved in the actual building of Sandbox, its development, what's happening with the community, with the different activation we are doing, Builder Challenge, Builder Bootcamp, Builder Launchpad, Seasons, and so on.
All right, super cool. So as for the DAO side and also for the project side, what do you think will be the next several like milestones for the DAO, and also what can we expecting for the next several months, especially like till next year?
So as you know, there's always a lot of things ongoing at Sandbox. Our priority is to keep improving the user.
So in the previous question she asked, isn't delegation just another centralization of voting power? Seb said that they try to think of all the negative things and the bad things that can happen and then prevent them, but they're not going to be able to prevent everything. And he referred to delegation as one of those things that it might be a necessary evil. And then he said something. He started talking about how this delegation is an opportunity to give rise to new community leaders who look to do what they can when they can, and then maybe that will give rise to other people. And the analogy he gave was to become the mayor of a community. So Sandbox still has neighborhoods. So he mentioned either here or in the future, not long from now, he mentions how neighborhoods may play a part where the mayor of a neighborhood gets elected, or say some DAO sometime self-elects a metro police. So like a law enforcement or a DAO enforcement type thing. So he's theory crafting here that perhaps the community will come up with a solution that they don't even think of yet, but in order to counter the good point that Mia raised, that delegation may just be another centralization of power, and it might be a necessary evil, but how do you account for the evil that it does create? And Seb says, well, I'm hoping that new thought leaders emerge to solve that issue. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. He, as far as I'm concerned, he's putting his money where his mouth is. He has articulated that he wants the community to decide, and then he does it. So I think that's cool. It's very cool.
Experience for the players and the creators. So
we're going to
ship new version of the Game Maker that keeps adding exciting opportunities and possibilities for creators. We'll introduce new gameplay mechanics soon that allows people to play in multiplayer, to have more actions and gameplay capabilities with the avatars. The season 4 is a major milestone for this year that's coming, and will offer a lot of content to explore and reward. So stay tuned about that one. And just recently, actually, this week, yesterday, we announced, I just come back from Gamescom in Germany, the leading video game conference, and we announced the launch of a new program called the Voxel Games Program, which essentially extend what the Sandbox is. Right now, you know Sandbox as like this platform where there is a no-code game maker. You can make games and experience without any programming, and you can only play the experience that are on the lens made with that no-code game maker. But it's a very powerful tool that's onboarded a lot of people, first-time creators, make content creation accessible. At the same time, it was not necessarily fitted for the existing video game industry, the indie developer, the game studios that are making those mobile or console or PC hits. So the Voxel Games program, we started to partner with third-party studios who are making games with Unreal, with Unity, on HTML5, and publish them, those games, on the App Store, Google Play Store, Epic Store, Steam, and so on. They can be free-to-play with microtransaction, with ads. And those games, the only requirement they have is like they will have the voxel style, the voxel graphic that are specific to Sandbox, but they can have their own monetization, they can have their own gameplay made with those engines, and they will be offering the possibility to connect to the 6 million Sandbox accounts. And if you connect your Sandbox account, then you can see your data, your avatar, your land, and you can use them in the gameplay. But so that means like you will have traditional games, popular gameplay that attract regular audiences as an onboarding way toward Web3. And it's true to the vision of what Metaverse is. Like, as a player, I can use my digital asset and my identity across multiple games and platforms, like we've been saying before. Mm-hmm. We announced partnership with two game studios already, the Frag Games and the DevOps Agency. They will be building dungeon game, vampire survival game, and we're already talking with a lot of other studios. So progressively, you're going to see proven gameplay from mobile, from PC, where you can start enjoying Sandbox, the younger game maker platform.
Amazing. Super.
I tried searching for this on Blockchain Alliance. Couldn't find any YouTube videos or something where he spoke to this. So I don't know exactly what he's referring to. This is the first time I've heard of a Voxel Games program. But I think, so what I wrote down was that it acts as a separate thing that onboards Web 2 games to Web 3 by allowing them access to their own game engine like Unity or Unreal Engine plus monetization. And that it gives them access to the $6 million sandbox gaming accounts. So it gives them access to the sandbox player base and still allows them to somehow use Unreal Engine and Unity. So their own game engines and then their own monetization. Not exactly sure what that means or what that looks like. I can't tell. Does that mean my lands are going to be useless for that? I'm not sure. But fascinating thing. So trying to look for a YouTube video or something I can find that helps explain that.
Looking forward to everything that you just described. So thank you so much for all of these kind of description about the sandbox DAO and also the project. I think, yeah, we are in the like last period of time for the live stream. So kind of curious, how do you think the sandbox like eventually stand out as one of the biggest metaverse project at the end? And what actually you think is the most like important qualities, no matter for the entrepreneurs and also for the project itself to stand out?
Well, I think like Sandbox is really unique in many aspects. First, the voxel graphic and aesthetic has become very recognizable, not just in Web3, but in general in the gaming industry and by many brands. Second is like we're known for lands, virtual land. We've become the largest decentralized virtual world with this map, those 164 lands, part of different neighborhoods, and that we curate top brands from part of the world or by thematic to bring together. Sand token has become one of the top 10 gaming tokens and the top 100 cryptocurrencies according to CoinMarketCap by market capitalization. And there's no other place, Web3 or not, where like you can have all that mashup of brands and IPs and content that you can play, just like you can see right behind me, those different characters that come together that can become your identity. And we're accessible. Like we've been abstracting the complexity of blockchain. Meaning, like, when you enter Sandbox, you can claim NFT, you can receive rewards, you can mint your own content without a single line of code. You never wrote a smart contract. You just connected and even creating your wallet has been super simplified. And I think we've proven over the years, launching season, launching events, launching game jams and various programs that, there's a lot of things to do and to explore on Sandbox now with over 1,300 games and experience made by the creators. And we want to keep doing that. And we hope that being consistent, being focused year after year, improving the user experience and the creation process, opening ourselves to more possibilities, like we just announced with the Voxel Games program, we hope we'll continue to be, like you said, a reference in the space and attract both like new creators and top creators already in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the vision and mission of the Sandbox DAO has already, like, is there any like changes for the vision or the mission side for the Sandbox when it just got started the first day until today?
I think it's a bit too early to say in 3 months because we've only seen 12 proposals. It hasn't taken, in my opinion, we haven't yet seen the full potential of what DAO means. Like, I can't wait to see like the delegation and new community leaders emerge, represent, talk, do the job to explain maybe even better than myself what Sandbox is and what can Sandbox do and how to make Sandbox even better. That's kind of my dream of what the DAO could achieve one day. The idea that they could also influence the roadmap of development and to say, like, this is that feature we absolutely want and like we need to develop it, or even one day to develop new creation tools out of the box. That's also a possibility that the community can vote upon. I hope that by next year as well, because with the constitution that was voted and the council member are elected for 1 year, will be a new election. So people will actually present themselves, voted by the community. And we're going to start also like the impact of different, I would say, management of the DAO just like we've seen with ApeCoin, like and a few other, and like how that impacts the different dynamics, the market of sandbox, the content we're going to see, and so on.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I want to see the.
So I didn't pause him. I wanted him to go through his whole thing there. This is what really convinced me to do this podcast episode, is that answer right there. And what impresses is too grand of a word. It's yet again, I see evidence that SEB is clearly lining up the DAO to be the successor for what he's built. He keeps, like, when he said that this is, you know, I'm gonna go back a little bit. Let's go through this again.
The idea that obligation and new wealth, I think.
Here we go.
I think it's a bit too early to say in 3 months because we've only seen 12.
Okay. 3 months. So May 28th is when the DAO was announced. He thinks it's too early within first three months to say whether or not that. Mia's question was, do you think the vision of the DAO should change or the mission? He says, too early to tell. Okay.
Proposal. It hasn't taken, in my opinion, we haven't yet seen the full potential of what DAO means. Like,
okay. We haven't yet seen the full potential of what DAO means. They're referring not just to Sandbox DAO. He's referring also to ApeCoin DAO, City DAO, Maker DAO, Uniswap DAO. DAO is still a super early concept. Well, in like the past few years. And it started first with Ethereum. So I didn't know what a DAO was before May 28th. I had no idea. Me, like many others, the DAO was suddenly announced. And I'm like, most of us were like, what the heck is a DAO? So I start going on a YouTube spree. I start going on Twitter spaces like Mochaverse Hall and Bulls on the Block. And I just start connecting and figure out the DAO is actually just a bunch of people trying to figure out how to work together to build a community, and that they're just as confused about it as we are, and we're all just trying to figure it out. Even the ones that have been around since the beginning, which was like 3 years ago, not even. But the very first DAO was Ethereum DAO, and it failed. It got hacked, and it had to get forked over, or it had to do a fork in order to survive. So it had to fork because there was a bad actor who, I think, took over the Ethereum DAO and had full control over it. So the community decided to fork and remove that power and shore up the hack exploit so that it couldn't happen again. But that was the start of it all, Ethereum. And the start of it was a failure, a very, very high profile failure. And so if you Google or YouTube it, you'll find it. It's one of the first videos that I found, which is, what is a DAO? And so what he's saying is, we don't yet know, and we don't even know yet what the potential is of the Sandbox DAO. The Sandbox DAO is even more unique than some of these other ones because the Sandbox is the intersection of gaming and business and creators. And this utility stands at the forefront of, not only do they have a product, but they have a service, and they have multiple career fields involved in this. It's not like or in ApeCoin DAO, it's mostly revolving around profile pictures. And then out of that was born all these different services and initiatives that are trying to keep that value around the brand of ApeCoin DAO. Sandbox doesn't have that issue. It has a product, a workable, deliverable product. It's a game. So people can play a game. And people have been playing games for a long time. And so the blockchain supports the game. The artists support the game. The game makers support the game. The serial entrepreneurs support the game. And the DAO, now the DAO is here. You're talking about business people and business interests and actual entrepreneurship. That is powerful. all of it together is what makes that powerful. So he's speaking to, we don't even know yet where all of this is going to go. Not yet.
I can't wait to see like the delegation and new community leaders emerge, represent, talk, do the job to explain maybe even better than myself what Sandbox is and what can Sandbox do and how to make Sandbox.
That right there. That's what convinced me of this episode that I'm doing right now. When he said the words, my dream is for someone to do it better than I'm doing it, to explain it better than I can explain it. That is not only humility, but also to me, the sign of a good leader, the sign of someone who can be trusted, is someone who can acknowledge that there are others who know things that you don't. There are others who can do things better than you can. You don't know everything, and it's a fool's errand to think that you do. I see Seb, when he said that convinced me that I still had lingering doubts, especially how the DAO rolled out. I wish they had put a little bit more foresight into not communicating a DAO to the SandFam. It just set everything, almost everybody, off on the wrong foot. And right now, there's this big suspicion. It's a humongous hill to fight for SandFam, who just view the DAO as nothing but a cash grab or this dictator's regime of, why are we even here participating? Because the Sandbox DAO has, or the Sandbox has 27 million voting power, which even though they promised not to use, they accidentally use it in the first few SIPs, which is why they had to resubmit them. And then just people don't follow up with the apologies and please forgive us, we didn't mean to do that sort of thing. And this just communication mounts and mounts and mounts. And this is why this podcast exists, because I wanted to start documenting the process by which these things were developing. They're not developing in a vacuum or in the secret lair. It's, if you put the dots together, you can see how Seb is trying to communicate that, I'm sorry, we messed up. I didn't mean for that to happen. Cyril saying, I'm sorry, we messed up. Didn't mean for that to happen. The advisory board members are saying, hey, we didn't actually know each other before all this happened. We just knew Seb. And so now that kind of goes against where people are saying that, oh, is this collusion going on? Well, not exactly. Not exactly. There might be, it's true that Seb did want these people there and they got in, and that the votes were rushed. Rushed is the wrong word. The day the DAO was announced, the voting for the first SIPs happened. And the first SIPs was approve a budget, approve a constitution, approve of this, approve of that, approve of that. And just, it was so overwhelming that things got approved. And I haven't done a podcast episode yet on the constitution and the bylaws and our association, but I have a contract writing background and contract negotiation background, and I have questions. I have questions, comments, and concerns about the way this stuff is worded. There's massive loopholes in these bylaws, things that can be exploited, things that exist outside of what a DAO can agree to. Like, there are legal loopholes for the legal company that runs all of this. And I'm going to, I did some early stream episodes where I was putting them together. Should actually make those podcast episodes. But I'm going to do a podcast episode on my findings. And I've been trying to get Cyril on the podcast so that we can talk about this before I yield my analysis. Because right now it's not looking good, and I want to talk to him and give him the benefit of the doubt. And you know, I would think it's best if we hear from him first before I render my observations, because my observations are pretty harsh coming from over 10 years doing contract writing and clauses, and introducing clauses and enforcing of contracts and that sort of thing. And so I think it will be easier on my analysis. I think my analysis will go a lot better and it'll be less harsh if I can talk to him and understand his mindset and how it all came to pass before I do that. But Seb, bring it back here to this AMA. Seb is saying, I can't wait for leaders to emerge out of this. I can't wait for someone to do it better than me. And I agree completely. I hope people do things better than me. I hope someone does a podcast better than me. I hope someone does SIPs better than me. If people are doing better than each other and we're improving constantly, then this is all going to work out. The DAO is going to work out. The game's going to work out. The community is going to work out. If we're all working together and we're propping each other up and we're not fighting each other, or not what some people call PvPing each other, trying to take away like it's a zero-sum game. If we prop each other up, help each other, and for me, help others be better than me, we got nothing to worry about. And nothing but time. So, loved his answer. Very wise answer to me. My opinion.
Even better. That's kind of my dream of what the DAO could achieve one day. The idea that they could also influence the roadmap of development and to say, like, this is that feature we have.
There it is again.
And like,
influence the roadmap of development.
Or even one day to develop new creation tools out of the box. That's also a possibility that the community can vote upon. I hope that by next year as well, because with the constitution that was voted and the council member are elected for 1 year, will be a new election. So people will actually present themselves voted by the community.
Close enough.
Yeah. And we're going to start.
They don't get reelected until December of 2025.
The management of
not
the DAO.
December this year. December
like
next year.
With Apecoin, like, and a few other, and like, how that impacts the different dynamics, the market of sandbox, the content we're going to see, and so on.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I would say the last question from the formal interview is that as for a new like users within the sandbox DAO ecosystem or the sandbox ecosystem, what would be the like advices that you will give out to them to get started within the ecosystem?
Right.
There's one part of this answer that I wanted to talk about.
A lot of things that you can do in sandbox at the end of the day. You can be a creator, you can play, you can have an avatar, you can be a fan of one.
This was a nice off ramp. As an interviewer, I appreciate this question.
I guess
it allowed
start,
him to kind of off ramp and on a good
NFT
note.
For free. We give NFTs as reward to anyone creating an account on sandbox. Play some of the events to get a feeling of what it is now. And then think like, okay, it looks like this now, but a year ago, it was so much more ugly. Slow, not as fun, and so on. So what can it be in 1 year again, in 2 years again, and so on? And that's really how I approach it, because sometimes we are so hands down on it. Sometimes I look back and say, oh, it's been 5 years already. It changed so much. Sometimes I Google previous image.
Yes, so that right there was the part I wanted to key in on this answer, was take a look at what it was a year ago and what it is now, and see how much progress we made. We, SandFam, the game, the community. It's great to see how we've evolved. And I agree with that. I remember what it was like when we first played, how rough it was. But you could see the passion, the devotion, the drive for success, and all the partnerships they were bringing in. And now it's starting to really come to fruition. You can start to see the technology of the sandbox start to take shape with and start enable all of the pre-existing foundations are starting to really enable each other. And that is, to me, just where compounding success starts to happen. I don't think we've reached it yet, but I think we're almost there. Almost there.
I see videos of myself talking 3 years ago, and I say, wow, okay, like, it's great to see as well.
That was also cool. I watched videos from many years ago for him on YouTube, and I did that in preparation of trying to interview his co-founder, Arthur Madrid. And you can tell the difference. Arthur spoke a lot in the early years. You can tell from like 7 years ago. Arthur was the one speaking mostly. And Seb was sitting, not sitting, but he was standing there to support. But he sometimes spoke, but mostly Arthur talking about what the sandbox is and could be and the decentralization of it and the NFTs and the tokens. And he was the one who spoke a lot and then mentioned the white paper and all of that. And then now you see Seb. Seb is very comfortable, or at least appears very comfortable talking and doing all the conferences. And Arthur is no longer at the forefront. So that switch, you can tell the difference. He looks different. He sounds different. He carries himself much more confidently now than years past when he was standing, waiting for his turn to speak and represent the sandbox.
How much it evolved. And so the potential of what we're building is important. It gives us like the North Cap where we want to go. And being in there, being part of the community, understanding that ownership matters and there's true utility behind, even more with a DAO, I think that's what I would recommend to the first-time creators and participants.
All right. Thank you so much, Sebastian, for everything. And we still got several minutes, so we will do another round of lightning round. And for the
So I'll just kind of turn it down a little bit here because it's going to go over things like what's your favorite food and what books do you recommend and all of that. So while they're talking about that, I'll just kind of outro here. I was very pleasantly surprised to watch this one. I think it kind of solidified now that, you know, when I first heard all this stuff in different AMAs and it was kind of all scattered and pieced together, you could piece it together, but it wasn't super, super obvious what was being said. But now that I kind of have the benefit of hindsight, I see what the DAO, how the DAO was rolled out and what they're trying to do to maintain momentum and all the product improvements that they're making. This to me took on a new light. It connected new dots. And the dots to me were clear and that Seb intends to hand responsibility over to the DAO that the game company currently does. He intends for the DAO to elect ambassadors, the DAO to elect the community manager, and that he really believes, he seems to really, really believe in empowering the community to own the sandbox. Now, there might be some legality things that get in the way of a DAO owning an actual game company. We'll see. Don't know. There were some really interesting case law that's developing around DAOs. One of them got sued. Who was it? Which DAO? One of them got sued and in the American court by, was it the SEC or the CFTC or someone sued a DAO, right? And what they found was that a DAO can be sued because of some legal ways in which it wasn't formed. So it wasn't an LLC or anything like that, but it was sued as a person. And then that drug into it, all the wallet holders. So that's one of the reasons why I think Cyril created the Sandbox Foundation as a legal entity to protect the members and us from being sued, litigated from anyone in the world because of the international court system and the way things work like that. We're not just because people don't know who you are doesn't mean you can't get drug into the courts. That's what's starting to emerge now and why it's important to think about this stuff now. Why it's important for us to start doing what we can to solve these problems and be proactive and discuss what do we want of the DAO. And then once we know what we want, or at the very least, we start talking about what it means for us to vote into existence goals and even just talking about what we want to do. That is the road we need to take. That's the way we got to go. It's clear that regulations all over the world are trying to face cryptocurrency, and already some regulations are starting to face DAOs. You do not want to be on the receiving end of regulation on the DAOs. You want to be on the proactive end of it. Just take my word for it. I've been in government for a while. Take my word for it. You want to be on the proactive side. You want to do what you can to be at the table. Because if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that's not good for us if we're on the menu. So I think, who was it? I just tried to schedule an interview with. Where'd he go? Ooh, come on. Davivi. So Davivi, just heard from Bulls on the Block this past Saturday. Davivi was talking about from CityDAO how shoot, I just lost my train of thought. So cool listening to him too. Talk about DAO. Dang, I had my thought and it went right out, right out. Yeah, I don't remember, but in any case, the DAO is you want to be in the proactive side of this, and the sandbox has a lot to lose if it gets this wrong. It's got a game, it's got an actual product. Some of these other DAOs can, you know, if they disappear, some of them they don't really have a ton of assets to lose, but we have a physical game. So I'm going to do everything I can to be a proactive community member, and I hope you do too. So I'll end it there. Thank you all for your time, and I hope you found this just as interesting as I did. I will post the link in the VOD and everything else so you can look at it yourself and watch it. It was super cool. Super cool. Loved it, Mia. Thank you so much for asking the questions, and for Sebastian for being open about what his thoughts were on stuff. So, end there. All right. See ya.
All right. Thank you so much. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening to Twitter Space. Let's see you guys next time. All right. Bye.
Thank you, Mia. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. See you soon.